Welcome to Inside the World Economic Forum. It's Thursday, November 10th in Geneva. I'm Michelle Mishler.
And I'm Mike Hanley. And this week on the pilot edition of this program, we're talking all India, all the time.
As you mentioned, Michael, this is the pilot edition of this podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about why we're doing this?
Inside the World Economic Forum is our weekly audio program, put together each Thursday and distributed online via iTunes and RSS feeds from our website and the forum blog. The World Economic Forum is so much more than our annual meeting in Davos every year. Just about every month we have a regional meeting somewhere in the world where we bring together stakeholders from across society, from government, from business, from the not-for-profit sector, spiritual leaders, anyone who's anybody who has a stake in improving the state of the world to discuss issues that are facing that particular region. We do projects and initiatives also designed to improve the state of the world, issues as vast and as various as sustainability in the environment, industry initiatives designed to improve things for our various industry stakeholders, and a vast variety of activities. It's hard enough to get a handle on all of this stuff when you've got a full-time job here. If you don't, it's almost impossible. So,
that's right. And when are we going to be publishing this, and how can people subscribe?
Publishing every Thursday morning, Geneva time, and we'll put it up on our on the forum blog. You can subscribe via RSS on our website and via iTunes.
And Michael, as you did mention, there are very many regional meetings. This month, we have the India Economic Summit, and it's going to be hosted for the first time in Mumbai. It's going to be November 12th through the 14th.
I understand you met with Sushant Palakoti Rao, the Senior Director and Head of Asia here at the World Economic Forum, to discuss what's going on in India, the program, who's coming along, and why he is so excited.
That's right. Let's have a listen. And joining me now is Sushant Palakoti Rao. He's the Senior Director and Head of Asia. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Good morning.
I guess the first thing that we want to talk about is what are the issues going to be that will shape the conversation this year in India?
Yes. There are two parts to, if we look at the program, broadly speaking. There's the international dimensions of India's role in the global economy as one of the largest Asian economies, as a member of the G20, and in a very challenging time for the global economy, of course, which is faced with an economic contraction. And although in the past a large economy with a large domestic market like India could somewhat shield itself from the implications of economic recession, this year it's different. Growth is down in India as well. There are many concerns around inflation. So we have to look at the international dimensions of India's role in this new global reality. So it is exactly the topic with which we'll start the program with the finance minister of India and some of the leading corporate voices from India. At the same time, the domestic picture of India is equally important. There are implications, of course, for many stakeholders, not just the industry leaders, but also civil society. And therefore, we'll be looking at what is very often referred to as India's inclusive growth agenda and how all these different stakeholders are working together to ensure that India's growth is sustainable, is equitable, and really helps to address some of the key challenges like poverty, like creating jobs and improving health.
Of course. You're talking about the challenges. What do you think India needs to set as priorities to tackle these challenges? Which challenges do you think are the most important to look at first?
Well, maybe I'll refer to the theme of the summit this year, which is linking leadership with livelihood. And I think it's a very important linkage between two areas which are critical. One, of course, I mentioned this inclusive growth agenda, and that is about creating the livelihoods for the future. You're in one of the demographically youngest economies in the world.
That's right, eh?
Yes.
What is the average?
If you look, I mean, almost half the population is 25 years of age and younger. So if you put that into terms of the number of people that will be entering the workforce and compare that against to the number of available jobs, there are concerns when one identifies that there are some gaps, and therefore there is an important role for both government and industry to play in ensuring that this young generation of Indians, which is coming forward, has the necessary skills which are matched to the realities of the economy, and that the employers are also playing their role in creating the right jobs. But for that to happen, the environment has to be conducive, and that's why we come to the other part of the equation, which is the leadership part, and whether that's leadership in the private sector, but also in the public sector. And therefore, one sees that we have put forward on this year's agenda a lot of topics which relate to accountability, good governance, and transparency. And I think you'll find, Michelle, that that's also been the kinds of issues that have really shaped the national debate this past year in India. And therefore, now after 11, 12 months, it's a good opportunity now to take the outcomes of those deliberations and put them forward into actions.
The summit is definitely a multi-stakeholder platform. How does the summit then tackle questions, the delicate questions like corruption and transparency?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because I think it's in the forum's DNA to be a multi-stakeholder platform. We've always convened together leaders from different walks of life. You see that reflected in the speakers of this year's program, even in the co-chairs. They're not just industry leaders. They include the chairwoman of Transparency International. So if we took a sensitive issue, as you've mentioned, like anti-corruption and transparency, it's important when you have such a group of leaders coming together that one affords them opportunities to have both private conversations where they can perhaps be a bit more frank and open with each other. And therefore, we are convening, in fact, a group of leaders from the government, from industry, from civil society, and also from some international bodies like Transparency International, to have that conversation on what needs to be done. What is the best case scenario, and how does one get there? But then thereafter, it's also important to have these discussions in a public forum as well. And therefore, the outcomes of this session will then lead into what will be hosted as a live television debate to really engage the public also in this dialogue as well. And we'll be also be using many different social media platforms like Facebook, like Twitter, to also engage the public in these conversations, put forward some of the questions that have come from the public through our social media platforms to the panelists.
Like I said, it's pretty important to involve the public, particularly these days with movements such as Occupy Wall Street.
Absolutely. And I think that's why the World Economic Forum is particularly proud to be the international organization which most exhaustively uses all forms of social media, and that we've always had conversations with the public.
Also kind of the big change this year, the move from Delhi to Mumbai. Now, it seems like it's somewhat symbolic moving from the capital to the States. Can you elaborate on that and why it was brought to New Delhi?
Yes.
Why it was brought to Mumbai, rather.
I'm happy you used the word States, because it could be on the surface simple to view this as a city-to-city move and just simply changing the background. But as you point out, it actually is about symbolism, because it's not so much a city-to-city move, but much more a symbolic move of from the center to the States. If you look at India and its five top states, for example, those five top states all have a population which is larger than any economy in the European Union. And it gives you an idea of the scale of states in India, and also the important role that they play for implementing policies which are created in the center and shaping economic growth of the country. And with that in mind, after 26 years of having our Inter-Economic Summit in New Delhi, we've now instituted this change whereby our summit will take place every other year in the capital, and then the other years in one of the states of India. Coming to Mumbai, of course, is a good first start. The state in which Mumbai is, Maharashtra, is one of the economically most important. Mumbai itself is a commercial capital and gateway of India. And therefore, we're not only excited about having our first meeting in Maharashtra and in Mumbai, but also by the fact that there are going to be four chief ministers. These are the leaders of Indian states coming to the summit. And therefore, we'll be able to not only put focus through the content of the program, but also through the people who are coming to speak about the role that states play, facilitate a good dialogue as to what exactly states need to do in order to see important national agendas like inclusive growth become a reality.
Excellent. Well, I am sure it's going to be a very interesting summit this year. Thank you very much for joining me today. And I look forward to speaking with you next week when you're back. And we can have a little wrap-up of how everything went in India.
Thank you. Looking forward as well.
Now we turn to India's place in the global economy.
That's right. And in this year's Global Competitiveness Report, India's rankings dropped yet again from 51st to 56th place. Now, what is to blame for this? What are India's strong points and where do they need to focus their attention? Thierry Geiger, he's the Associate Director and co-author of the Global Competitiveness Report, and he answered some of these questions.
So India is kind of stagnating. When you look at the score of India for the past few years, it remained stable. So the other countries are actually, you know, overcoming India. And yes, India is failing to improve significantly its competitiveness. Major issues in areas such as infrastructure, health, education, macroeconomic environment, these basics, the basic foundations of competitiveness, India has weaknesses there. So this points to a number of concerns. It signals that the business community is getting a bit impatient and has its expectations unmet because of the government failing delivering, you know, the reforms and making the investments necessary to sustain the growth momentum. And yes, India has been growing really fast. What we seeing is that there might be 5 years from now the danger of growth slowing down because India is not maybe making the right investments, the reforms necessary to sustain this momentum. So I would say infrastructure. Infrastructure needs to grow at a similar pace as the economy. So if the economy grows at 10%, the supply of infrastructure needs to grow at 10%. And it's clearly not the case in India. So huge bottlenecks, capacity is limited in ports, air transport, roads, obviously. So huge capacity constraints. So infrastructure is probably the most problematic factor for India's competitiveness. Then there are issues around institutions. So a lot of corruption still and inefficiency, red tape. Issues around the macroeconomic situation, huge deficits. Past 10 years, deficits about 10% of GDP. And this is clearly not sustainable. Although debt remains quite low, but there is a need to be much more sound in terms of fiscal management. And all the issue around education and health, access to sanitation, widespread poverty, access to electricity. So the basic rights of citizens are lacking. Well, India has a few strengths, starting with innovation capacity. So over the past two decades, India has developed and become a leader in business process outsourcing, for example. And they have developed a capacity to innovate, especially for the bottom of the pyramid. So they are very strong in this area. However, this is not what will create enough jobs and what will make India operating this transition to, you know, manufacturing powerhouse, which India needs to become. So yes, there are a number of niche and strengths in India's economy, but it's not enough to pull India up. But again, the business community is very dynamic, vibrant, quite sophisticated. The financial markets are also fairly developed. But again, India needs to look at the basics first in order to grow at a sustainable pace.
The World Economic Forum released its most recent Global Gender Gap report on November the 1st. The report examines the magnitude of gender-based disparities around the world and tracks their progress over time. Sadia Zahidi, Senior Director of Constituent Communities, co-authored the report and gives us insight on the gender parity situation in India.
India is actually staying in essentially the same place. We haven't seen much progress over the last 6 years that we've been producing this report. And I think that's the biggest concern. India started out fairly low in the rankings and has stayed fairly low in the rankings. And so there's been very little improvement, and obviously that's a concern. Let's take a look at the four sub-indices of the Global Gender Gap Index. If we look at health, India is ranked 134 out of 135 countries. If we look at education, 121 out of 135 countries. The reason those two indicators are so low is primarily because of fairly low healthy life expectancy of women, the very negative sex ratios at birth in relation to women, or rather girls. And then if we look at education, still fairly low numbers of women versus men in primary education, in secondary education, in tertiary education. And in terms of the literacy rate as a whole, it's 51% for women and 75% for men. So still enormous differences when it comes to basics like health and education. Then let's take a look at the other two sub-indices. One is economic participation and opportunity, where India ranks 131 out of 135 countries. And the other is political empowerment, 19 out of 135 countries. So what we're seeing essentially is a situation where, in terms of economic participation and opportunity, women are certainly being left behind. If we look at the labor force participation rate, 35% for women, 85% for men. If we take a look at estimated earned income and the differences, women are earning about a third of what men are earning. If we take a look at women in senior level positions, very few. One of those indicators is legislators, senior officials, and managers. Only 3% of those positions are occupied by women. However, if we take a look at political empowerment, there I think the picture is extremely different, and women are really making it to the top in terms of political leadership. Of course, there are the quotas that have been put in place in the local councils, but if we look at this higher-level data, federal-level data, women in parliament, women in ministerial-level positions, and the fact that India has had women prime ministers and presidents in the past, I think these all serve to boost India's ranking. What we're starting to see is, in terms of the higher-skilled labor force, women are starting to be as educated and as high-skilled as men, and I think that is a very positive sign for the future. And what that's going to lead to is a very large pool of highly skilled women entering the workforce now and in the future. At the same time, with India's economy growing the way it is, I think that provides enormous opportunities for starting to reverse this economic participation and opportunity gender gap. And I think that's where the progress will really come from in the future.
And that was Sadia Sahidi, Senior Director of Constituent Communities. Now we hear from Randall Krantz. He's the Director of the Sustainability Initiative and tells us a little bit about India and its sustainability challenges. India does have 18% of the world's population on only 2.4% of the world's total land area. And this has significantly increased the pressure on its natural resources, soil exhaustion and erosion, water stresses, air and water pollution afflict many areas. Here's Randall Krantz.
India has multiple challenges. I'd say there's certainly a large challenge in equity within the country and just given the size of the country, so the number of people that they want to pull out of poverty. At the same time, with that challenge is a huge opportunity. There's many international businesses in the world, most international businesses in the world, looking and exploring how to invest in India, how to invest in what is going to be the new middle class in India, what is already becoming the new middle class. And it's clear that the Indian companies and the Indian spirit of entrepreneurship has captured that, at least in spirit, if not in practice. And examples like the Tata Nano and others are certainly classic in that they are really capturing the aspirations of that emerging middle class and looking to see where they will go and looking to take advantage of that new disposable income that people are coming across, and with that improving their lives. So there's a development challenge. There are environmental challenges. There's a water stress challenge. India has potential for severe water stresses, and many areas already are water stressed. It's a country that has paralleled with that huge opportunities for agricultural growth. So with better water management, those can be matched so that it becomes a world leader in agronomic resources. So I'd say each of the challenges is balanced with an opportunity. I think if nothing else, the optimism in India is certainly something that helps. I think that over the summer, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh was saying that by 2025, India will be the third largest GDP in the world. I mean, that's huge. That kind of optimism is really something that the world needs right now. And so I think that it's important that the idea of sustainability and economic growth are linked. They have to be. In the longer term, it won't be possible to grow without being sustainable, because the rents on the economy and the environmental impacts will end up slowing an economy down if they're not thought through beforehand. There's quite a few interesting companies that are part of our global growth companies at the World Economic Forum. One of those, for example, is Jane Irrigation, that is looking at how companies in the agricultural space can irrigate using 70% less water. And that's the kind of order of magnitude that we need. We need not 5% less, 10% less. It's really got to be a full order of magnitude. So irrigating cotton with 70% less water suddenly makes it interesting and attractive for India's economy, and interesting and attractive for the farmers that are doing that. They really look at how they can use a local culture and combine that with the learning that's necessary to end up with something that is very good for the economy and very good for the environment as well.
And that's it for this pilot edition of Inside the World Economic Forum. We've spoken to Sushant Palakorti Rao, Thierry Geiger, Sadia Zahidi, and Randall Krantz. I'm Mike Hanley.
And I'm Michelle Mishler. And next week we'll have a little wrap-up with Sushant Palakorti Rao. He'll let us know how things went in India. We're also speaking with Dominic Walray. He tells us a little bit about some of the global risks facing the environment. And we will also hear from Espen Mellem, who talks about the new energy architecture.